B-Pod Studios.
Farsetta in the morning. .975 The Fanatic.
It is a great song. Not Rachel McAdams singing. Come on.
I don't think Bob even made it to this part.
I did. I saw it in the bar and he walked out and they demanded he come back in and sing it again. I made it.
All right.
That far.
Now, there's a big question, and I hesitate to do this without Jamie being here, but I have to know the answer to this question. Well, first off, Crystal.
Yeah, as if I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah. Crystal, have you watched Eurovision? Now, you live a full and exciting life, Crystal.
I really do.
None of us really do, but you do. Here's the deal. Did you watch any of Eurovision yet?
No.
Will Ferrell, Rachel McAdams, instant classic.
I didn't. I was probably too busy on someone's grill.
You mean oven? Are we putting it in the oven?
Shade.
We challenged Bob Cooney. We had a bet going here. I set the line at 18 and a half minutes. Okay? 18 and a half minutes is the over-under right there for how much Bob Cooney would make it through Eurovision, starring Will Ferrell, Rachel McAdams on Netflix. I said the over. Crystal, you said earlier today.
I said over. I think he's the guy who wants to see where things are going.
Okay. All right. Pat Egan, what did you say?
Under.
You said the under.
Yeah.
He'd bail on the under.
Yeah. He has the attention span of a millennial.
Bob, of the, and when I say instant classic, I say that sarcastically, but did you make it to the over or the under 18 and a half minute mark of Eurovision?
Now, this is no joke.
Uh-huh.
It went on,
uh-huh,
and a timer was set.
Wow.
Not by me,
okay,
but by Donna. A timer was set,
okay,
as soon as it started.
Which, by the way, can I just comment? That's funny, because you could just watch how much on Netflix. Just pause it. The time comes up.
I know, but she you know, that was our fun for the night.
So this is including... This is including opening credits. So,
No. And when the movie actually started.
Oh.
And she, unbeknownst to me, she videoed me at the beginning of the movie also.
Do we have a copy of this video?
I do have. So I'm sitting there, and I think my line was, wait, Will Ferrell actually read this script and said this is a good idea for a movie?
Oh, man.
So it didn't start out well for me. But to give it an honest shot, and not knowing at all the timing of this, I lasted exactly 18 minutes and 38 seconds.
The over!
Swear to God, that is the exact time.
Yeah, ding dong!
Who set that over-under? Is that you, Mark?
That was
incredible.
Well, and it's funny because it came to a scene.
Yes.
Because Mark also said he thought he knew the scene where I would bail.
Yep.
I did bail on a scene, but your scene was like a minute or two later, right?
So I'm not ruining anything for anybody, but
if they watch this movie, they're ruined already. It was horrible.
It's not that bad. You're an idiot.
It was a fun movie. It was fun. If you like really dumb, stupid comedy.
I love the guy who got 18 minutes and is making the proclamation that the entire movie was terrible.
Tell me it got a lot better after the first 18 minutes, Pat.
This is a guy who said Hamilton was really good, but he fell asleep during it. Know your role.
At the 25th minute, Dr. J and Allen Iverson play one-on-one.
Yeah.
It's the most spectacular part of the movie.
That's the only thing that could have saved him.
Kaiser Soze walks out of the police station.
So there's a part of the movie where Rachel McAdams' character consults elves.
Are we on the same scene?
Yeah.
Where she goes to the cave and lays...
that's where you bailed.
That's where I bailed.
Yeah, at the end of that, you were like, I'm out.
I said, are you kidding me? She's going to elves for help? I'm out.
Now, about 5 minutes after that scene, not even, this is the part I thought you would be out on, and it's Will Ferrell talking at length about his genitalia.
Oh.
And Rachel McAdams then trying to talk about her own genitalia.
I would have stuck around for her.
And if it wasn't that, there was a party scene that I thought was like 35 minutes into the movie, maybe, that you would have bailed on. But it was the elves that did you in.
Yeah.
Crystal, your stance on elves.
I'm just curious, Bob. Was there a height thing going on there? Like, you don't pay attention to people unless they're like 5'2"?
No.
Yes, no, that's exactly what it is. Well, I can tell you from experience.
Yeah, yeah, right? You're a height shamer. You height shame.
Yeah, I thought Egan got mad when I said something about elves.
Wow.
No, it's not that. I don't know what it was.
I'm just trying to ask, what was it about the elves? And I have not watched this, but what was it about the elves?
She was going to elves for guidance. Yeah. So she was laying on the ground, and there was like a little hole in the cave, like the Tom and Jerry little mouse hole. And she goes there, and she starts putting down
whiskey.
Yeah. And
what do you give your elves?
Yeah. Aren't elves diligent workers? Don't they work for Santa Claus? Don't they have to make presents for all the kids?
I'll tell you what. My love for elves.
Don't you think they would be knowledgeable in something?
I love elves, but they couldn't even save this movie, Crystal. That's how bad it was.
Bumping all the elves into it.
Yeah.
Stop calling out my people.
Now we're elf shaming.
My people, Pat said.
Pat Egan, his little house in the Northeast, just lives in there. Anyway, if you haven't seen Eurovision yet,
don't.
You haven't really.
If you haven't seen it yet, good for you.
All right, so you made it just
horrible.
I will say this: it was not nearly as bad as the Sherlock Holmes and Watson movie that they made with John C. Reilly. That was like the worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
Here's another thing: You also make Rachel McAdams look not good. Like, what's the thinking there?
She's Icelandic. She's supposed to be more...
There's plenty of beautiful Icelandic women, I would assume.
But from that type of small town, to be a little bit more, humble looking? Is that the way to say it?
Yeah. She opened the thing with purple lipstick.
You didn't even get to the part where she actually does look good, though. You got 18 minutes in.
I'll go back and watch The Notebook again.
Oh, man.
Purple lipstick is actually a thing, though.
But this wasn't. This was like neon purple or something. This was not a thing.
Well,
it wasn't. It
wasn't working.
You want to lean in for a wet one.
No.
That is okay. Yeah. I will say.
Now, did they hook up? I don't care if we ruin this movie, tell you the truth, because if you're watching it.
Yeah.
Did they wind up hooking up?
Oh, yes. So you don't want to watch, but you want to know what happened?
Yeah.
Hold on.
That could be a violation. You're right.
Right after Magic Johnson and Larry Bird play one-on-one, they hook up in the movie. Not Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, but Will Ferrell. You missed a classic.
All right, no, I guess.
Do I know you or do I know you?
You were right there. The over-under was perfect.
Bada-boom, bada-bang.
And to further,
yes.
Donna did not even know there was an over-under. So her and she's the one that timed it, 18:38.
That's amazing. Wow.
And 18 and a half was the over-under.
I'm wildly impressed. Now, I do have to make this special announcement for all our listeners right now because we have a special day today. It is 7-6 day. No elves today. Sorry. But here's the thing. We have people in the park. Pat, they're out there right now? They setting up and all that jazz?
Yeah, no, they're all set up.
Are they going to call in? Can we get them to call in? Can we tell those people to call in? We need to set the scene. We need a scene setter, if you will.
You want someone setting the scene?
Somebody set the scene.
We can get Connor, one of our producers.
Is he the sleeveless guy? Does he have sleeves today?
Just call him Guns.
He's over 5'2", and he is sleeving today.
Yeah,
he's got sleeves.
Yes, he's got sleeves.
Nice to him.
We can cut him off.
Nice to him to dress up.
Now, with scissors in the building.
It's worth noting, he didn't have sleeves before he got his Sixer shirt.
Oh.
So if you need some sleeves, stop by the parking lot. You can get a nice Sixer shirt sleeves.
If you want to see Tankini Connor, then by all means, just stop by the parking lot. It's 7-6 day here at 97.5 The Fanatic. We're celebrating the 76ers on their day on the calendar, July 6th, 7-6 day, as we call it. NBA insiders and special guests will be on the program throughout the day. Also be on throughout the radio station. Coming up at 7:30 today, we'll talk to our own Devon Givens. Then coming up at 8 o'clock, Aaron McKee, former 76er, current Owls head coach for Temple University. D-Line will join the show at 9 o'clock today. And then Hall of Famer Bobby Jones at 9:30 on the program. Now, here's what we got that's special for all our fine listeners out there. Everyone that wants to drive by our parking lot here, the West Lobby parking lot, we are handing out 76ers t-shirts to people who simply drive by and ask for one starting now 7 minutes ago in the West Lobby. So if you'd enjoy that, you'd like that, we got them for you. And this 76ers day, 7-6 day on the Fanatic is powered by Parks Casino and Sportsbook, the number one casino in Pennsylvania, back and open, ready to go for you with plenty of space for social distance. Plenty of space that is, for social distancing. It's the heartburn from the smoker bump.
Still hurting you?
Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, let's get Connor up here. Connor can set the scene so far for us right now. Connor, do we have you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm here, Mark.
All right, so set the scene for us. Where can people find you?
So we're out in the back corner of the parking lot. We have signs here at One Bala Plaza pointing you in from each direction so you can come in either entrance off of Belmont or off of St. Assis. And we're just out here in the corner, guys, in the night, 97.5 Fanatic tent. We're playing you guys here so the people driving by can hear you on their radio and over the speakers. And we're the guys in the red T-shirts throwing them out.
Oh, there you go. All right, nice. So look for the guys in the red T-shirts.
Are you wearing gloves, Connor?
Yes, got
good
gloves
man.
On.
Good man. And you do have sleeves?
Yes, sleeves today, yes.
Okay.
All right.
Big day. Needed to break out the sleeves.
Nice.
Thank you for dressing up. All right, keep us posted on all the developments outside, all right?
Will do, guys.
All right, thanks, Connor. Appreciate it. Look at that. Like I said, he dressed up for us.
Yeah.
Nice young man.
He's a good man.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let's ask our first poll question today. Now, we got three going on. We're going to kick them each around at the top of the hour. We're going to kick around each of these poll questions. Pat, can you give us our first poll question today? And we'll talk about this, obviously, throughout the day. We'll also talk about this probably up until he gets one. So, nonetheless, Pat, what are we asking the good people today? Our first poll question we're introducing now in the 7 o'clock hour, brought to you by Window Nation.
Yeah, so if you head on over to our Twitter account at 975Mornings or our Instagram account at 975TheFanatic, you'll find all three poll questions. The first one being, how much of a concern is Ben Simmons' jump shot status? Stop, he's fine, or it's huge.
All right, now stop, he's fine, is what a lot of people might say to answer this question because I'm sure they're sick of hearing it. The other is huge. And I do think it's a huge issue because I love a guy who's an all-star, but I admire the legend that can be a guy that's an MVP. And that's what I think is separating Ben Simmons. And this has been my argument throughout his entire career as a 76er, his entire career in the NBA. When it comes to Ben Simmons, he came into the league close to an all-star. Now he's a back-to-back all-star. That's impressive, right, for a young guy like himself?
A little bit, yeah. Two and a half years into the league, yeah.
And he does that without any semblance of a jump shot. That's how great he is at everything else. If he develops that skill, he goes from a guy who's a perennial all-star to a guy who's a perennial MVP candidate. That's why I believe we do not make enough of a big deal out of his jump shot. We can only talk about it more until he actually gets one because that, again, separates the all-star from the MVP. So I say, no, I'm not stopping. I'm going to keep it going. It's a huge deal. He needs to get that jumper. Bob Cooney, do we make too much of the jump shot or do we not enough?
No, he needs to learn how to shoot it. He needs to want to shoot it. He needs to get over that mental block that he has of shooting it. You know, I'm of the ilk of 15 on in. I'm fine with that. Spreads it enough for me. When people go to three-pointers, that doesn't really concern me. If he shows a want to take it every once in a while, great. But to me, yeah, it's big. It's big. He does have to learn how to do it. But it's funny also. I was thinking of this weekend. If the Sixers had a point guard that was as good as Ben Simmons, that went to the basket, did all the things he did, and was a horrendous jump shooter, horrendous, you know, like really bad.
Mm-hmm.
We would be calling for him not to shoot and just to drive to the basket. Am I right?
But at least we know that he would be willing to shoot.
Right. Yeah, all good and stuff, but we would go that way. Stop shooting, just take the ball to the basket or pass.
Right.
We'd be saying it.
Eric Snow, right?
Right, exactly.
There was, like, he wasn't anything terrific with the jump shot, but he, like, had that 10 to 13 foot.
Yeah.
He would do it. Whenever Allen wasn't shooting, occasionally somebody else would.
Yeah.
And it was Eric Snow a lot of times. He would shoot that, like, 13-foot jumper, like, from a step or two inside the free throw line. Or, excuse me, from the three-point line. He did it enough to the point where you had to respect it.
Yeah, exactly. Magic Johnson. If you go back, I told you I was big on during the pandemic. I watched a lot of Lakers from the 80s. Magic Johnson's jump shot was laughable. Seriously, in his first few years, it was one-handed. It was a set shot. He didn't really jump. It looked horrible. But when people backed off of him, he took it.
All right, Crystal.
That's what Ben Simmons has to do.
I'm with you. Crystal? Too much of it, or do we need more of it?
I can't, per the poll, I don't think we can say stop, he's fine, because he's not fine.
Mm.
I mean, plain and simple, Ben Simmons has to shoot. With the caveat of, it's not going to happen in this restart. Yes, it is a huge problem, and if he goes into 5-6 years in the league and he still doesn't have a jumper, He might find himself in a whole different situation.
Mm-hmm.
He got himself paid. And honestly, when that first happened, I was I'm always happy when guys get their money. But I was a little shocked that the Sixers did this deal early before he even showed the willingness to shoot.
I'm with
it's
you.
Almost like they're endorsing him not shooting. So I think that is that was, I don't want to say a mistake, because I like when players get their money, it sets up generational wealth for them. But I think that if we just let this go, then he would let it go. And I don't think we can. I think Ben Simmons is still a young player, and he plays off of the crowd, whether the boos or the cheers, or if he has a bad game and people talk badly about him, then he comes back with a monster game. We can't stop talking about it until he does it, because if we relax, I think he will relax.
I'm with you entirely there. I thought it was when they, first off, to go to your point about when they paid him, it was like, hey, you're fine now. Don't need to change anything. That's kind of the message it sent. And then it gives the player that opportunity to at least say, all right, well, I'm still this good now. I made my money. Can I still push? Do I have enough motivation within myself to push for a greater game, a greater overall game? And I think he does have that type of drive and that type of mentality. The unfortunate thing is he has come out and admitted that he needs that kick in the butt. I don't know if Brett's the guy to do that or not. I know he's tried. It hasn't worked. So whoever that next guy is going to be down the line, I hope he can provide that motivation for Ben. Now, we've gone around the horn here. Pat, I know you want to talk Philly today, but Ben Simmons with jump shot, yay or nay?
I think it's a big deal. I don't think it's as big of a deal as probably a lot of fans make it out to be.
Okay. All right. So you're the one that would side on the, you'd go that direction.
If I had to vote on the poll, I would have said he's fine.
You would have said stop, he's fine.
Yeah, I think I want him to add it, but I'm not at this point expecting him to add it.
Okay. Here's why I think those people that are in the jump shot category saying stop, he's fine, have an argument. This is why I believe that argument. I don't agree with it. But if you are going to err on that side, as Pat is doing, here's why I think that is legit. Why do we care how he gets his points if he gets his points? And I know an argument that you've brought up in the past, Bob, and this isn't where I side. This is just devil's advocate here. Mm-hmm. If he's going to the rim, like for instance, last year, one of the things that really frustrated me in that Raptors series was that he wasn't attacking the rim. He had a slew of games where he had like one free throw attempt, right? Like he was showing that classic, almost, stereotype argument that we've thrown at Ben Simmons, which is he doesn't attack the rim because he doesn't want to go to the line because he's a terrible free throw shooter. Well, as this season went on, I noticed a more aggressive Ben Simmons where he wasn't afraid to go to the rim. He wasn't afraid to get fouled and go to the line. And his free throw shooting has gotten incrementally better, like, but very marginal, like tiny little percentage points here and there.
Well, that
getting
was
better.
That was the big thing for me, was not necessarily adding a three-pointer. I didn't even care about three-pointers.
Right, three is stupid. Yeah, I'm talking about jumpers.
But
yeah.
Ticking up his free throw percentage, because it was what you just said. His ability to get to the rim is second to none. So if he could tip up his free throw percentage, it would be huge. And the guy that we have coming on at 7:30, Devon Givens, always says the best Ben Simmons is aggressive Ben Simmons.
Absolutely.
And when you see that, you see 30 points against the Brooklyn Nets in the playoffs. But you just don't see it as often as you'd probably like. To Crystal's point, I mean, it seems to happen the most when he's criticized in the media, and then all of a sudden he comes out and reminds you how good he is.
A kick in the butt. Go figure.
Yeah, let's give ourselves a pat on the back for that.
We just should all get assistant coaching titles. This is what we should be getting here. Or at least motivational speaker. I don't know, maybe sports psychiatrist.
I like assistant coach.
Assistant coach?
If there was a paycheck that came along with that too, I might take it.
Yeah, no, it's free.
You reluctantly.
It's all volunteers.
I'll take ball boy. You gotta know your place.
Mark, you said to you didn't agree with this point, but you said some people would say who cares how he gets his points,
right?
If he's getting his points.
Right.
But sometimes he hasn't been on the triple-double train as much this season, but when he does have triple-doubles, they seem vain because he's giving you 10 points, and because we know that he can get to the rim, sometimes the annoying thing is he'll drive straight to the rim and pass out because it seems like he's afraid to get to the line. He did show a little bit of improvement this year with getting a little bit more confidence to take it all the way there and get to the line. But right now, he's averaging 16.7 points per game. I think he can get to that 19, 20 point per game average if he showed a more willingness to shoot.
No, I'm 100% with you. And that's also where a lot of the spacing can come in. That's where he can help his own game as a point guard, because what point guard doesn't want a floor that's a little bit more spread, you know, have a little bit more more options to go at the point guard position there, draw some defenders out on you, opening up things down low for Joel Embiid, who has already come out and said that that's affected his style of play because he's worried about Ben driving the lane. That's why he's playing on the perimeter. I don't know how much of that I buy, but I'd say I buy about maybe 75% of it. simply because the other 25% is Joel Embiid acknowledging that he really wants to be like Steph Curry. Like, you can't have it both ways. Like,
small men want to be big. Big men want to be small. Athletes want to be musicians. Musicians want to be athletes.
And athletes want to be actors sometimes.
It's funny. I just looked up Ben's numbers. He averaged 5.3 free throws this year, 5.4 last year. But his percentage did go up from, so in the 3 years that he's been here, it's 56% first year, 60% second year, 63% this year.
Incrementally.
Yeah. If he can get that to the 70, all right.
Oh, you know, golden.
Yeah. Golden. I'll take that and get to the line eight times a game.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bob, you said everyone wants to be something else. What do people on radio want to be? As someone just filling in.
That's a good question. We're good where we are, Crystal. We're perfectly happy.
Yeah, I'm good here.
Everyone except
Egan just whispered something
radio
in my ear, but I can't say that.
Yeah. Oh, wait, you didn't say that on the air?
He said taller.
I didn't say that on the air.
No, that was just, I thought like it had the tone of just in my headset, but I wasn't sure.
It wasn't on the air. I value my job.
I'd be a pro athlete if
You'd
I could.
You'd be a pro athlete?
Yeah, I'd be a hurdler.
Too much.
What?
Huh?
A hurdler.
A hurdler.
All right, Laura Jones. I'm aware of what... I know what a hurdler is.
Yeah, I ran hurdles in high school.
You would be a professional hurdler.
Yeah. Lolo Jones style.
No, I don't... That's just the most random. Like, why a hurdler?
I grew up playing basketball, but I love hurdles. I like hurdles more than any other track event.
Is there money in the hurdle game?
I mean, if you're great at it.
If you're Lolo Jones, there is.
Hello?
I've never heard anyone say I want to be a hurdler. I would be. I'm not hurdle shaming. I'm just saying.
I think I would be like a great Ben Simmons defensively on the court and a great shooter, not JJ Redick level, in between, somewhere in between a consistent Quirk Moz, but less than a JJ.
Okay.
That would be me.
All right.
So you'd be a supreme defender and a well above
and
average shooter.
Above average shooter,
three
yeah.
And D. You'd be 3-and-D.
Exactly.
Okay.
Wow.
I'm for whatever I get to just sit on my ass for 4 hours and talk about other people performing athletics. I'll do that. Oh, radio show? I'll do that. Like, that's kind of where I fall into place here. Either that or a carpenter.
Oh, a carpenter?
Yeah. What?
And you're taken back by me saying hurdler?
Well, I've heard of a profession of carpenter. I haven't heard of a professional hurdler.
Yes, you have.
Yes, you have. People lump it in with track and field.
Jesus did it. It's kind of a big deal.
He was a hurdler?
Thank you.
He hurdled, but after you couldn't make money in it back then, he went into carpenter.
Oh, okay.
Everybody knows that.
Nobody's paying me for this now.
I think it was his dad. It wasn't
the
actually
Pharisees
Jesus.
The Pharisees and the Sadducees hurdling over
his
all
dad
of
was
them.
A carpenter. Jesus didn't work.
All right. No, I can't see.
My son works.
Yeah. Don't open this. Don't open this door of jokes down this lane because I will not be able to get out of it. Bob, what would you be? Would you be a hurdler?
If I wasn't here,
yeah.
I heard you probably a high school basketball coach.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I love that. You could still do that while still being here.
I did do it for 10 years, but yeah. That was a lifetime ago.
There you go. 610-632-0975. We got Jerome. Oh, we got Tasty Cake Dom on the line as well.
Oh, nice.
We're going to get to you guys in a minute. We'll continue the conversation about the value of Ben Simmons' jump shot. Do we put too much into it? Do we not put enough in it? Is it okay if he just makes his points in other ways? If the man was not a point guard, I'd probably be in that same school. He gets his points no matter what. But the fact that he runs the offense, that makes me want to have him stretch the floor a little bit, make people come out to guard him. Hey, look, Giannis, it's shown with Giannis, it takes more than just to shoot it. Because he shoots it, and still people sag off him because he shoots at, 25%?
Yeah.
He shoots the three, for instance. But
yeah, and he's been in the league longer, so you kind of expect it to be a little more finesse by now, but we're just getting Ben to like, come on, Ben, just open things up for the offense. Just shoot it.
Take the first step.
And then if he keeps missing and missing, then the cries will change to start making it.
All right, we'll continue this conversation, and when we return, we'll speak to our own Devon Givens here on 7-6 Day, brought to you by Parks Casino, right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta in the morning. The Fanatic.
Coming up in just a minute, we'll speak to our friend Devon Givens right here on 97.5 The Fanatic on 7-6 Day. Let's get to Jerome in Elkins Park. What's up, Jerome?
Good morning, everybody. Hey, how you doing?
Good, buddy.
Hey, Jerome.
Go get him, Crystal.
Yo, appreciate you.
I like sports. but it was just the way the situations were. I was glad to find out that I could pass the time and not have it. So I'm going to go right to the thing here. You guys generated my phone call.
Ooh.
It starts at the top, and at the top is the floor general. I'm not going to crush Brett Brown. I'm going to be diplomatic, Bob. But, you know, there are things in which when he makes statements about employing BS's family to take and initiate him on certain aspects that we all know about, that bothers me. Because he should be able to install that in his team. Like you have said, which I agree with you in this respect, what type of offense are they running? It could go into Joel Embiid, and I know you talk about him being out of shape and whatever, and that is true. And he's not the perfect player. But when he does play, he gives you what he's got. I can't remember the team or the date or the player, but when somebody is almost 6'10 with the athletic ability and drive and ability, hey, when he was going towards somebody, there was one person there, and he did not initiate just one person, I have a problem with that. The point guard is not supposed to be disavowed as far as what he brings to the table. It's 5-on-5, not 5-on-4.5, and he has to establish himself. John Wall has tremendous speed, but I bet you he'd have a hard time hitting the backboard. But he can score. And you know why he scores? Because he gets to the foul line. We're supposed to be playing bully ball.
Right.
Why aren't we getting to the foul line as a team?
It's a great question, and it's funny, and I've brought this up before. Elton Brand and I had a conversation back when he was playing still, when they brought him back on that second stint. And they were trying to figure out the Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid, you know, how they were going to all fit. And I was talking to Elton, and I said, do you think it can work? He said, how the hell could it not? He said, you know, if you get the ball and he didn't use bully ball back then, but he said, you overpower guys and get them in foul trouble all the time just by pounding the ball down low. Now, granted, this is a big man talking.
Right.
But that was his thought back then. And, you know, obviously it's carried over to his GM-ship now.
If anything made me miss old school basketball while watching Last Dance, and granted, that's not that old school to a lot of people listening right now. But that was the version of the NBA that I really loved. Like, and I still love the NBA. It's not, you know, the question. But I love that tough style, that going to the basket hard, right? Not the 3-point game that it's become today, which is still cool to watch and it's fun when you can play that way. But when it's like D'ing up and manning up and going hard to the basket and getting the foul, getting somebody else in foul trouble, going to the line, getting your points that way. That's the style I really miss. Like watching that more and more. And the Sixers can do that. They might be better equipped than any team in the NBA to do that. Why don't they do that?
I don't know.
That's the frustrating thing.
Especially when they said they were going to do that. And that was going to be their style of play.
And they did do that for like 20 minutes. And they'll do that anymore. It was cool for those 20 minutes, though. Speaking Sixers with us right now, our own Devon Givens joining us in the early hours today. What's up, Devon?
What's going on? Good morning, y'all. How y'all doing?
We had a little debate. Maybe you could help us out here. Do you ever put barbecue in the oven?
Put barbecue meaning like barbecue
ribs.
Chicken or something?
Ribs, something like that.
Yeah, I've had it that way. I've had, of course, barbecue chicken in the oven, yeah.
Okay.
Devon, what's up? Crystal Rich, how you doing?
Chris, what's going on? How are you?
Yeah, some calls were coming at me and Bob. I grill my ribs. And I think I can cook really darn well, but I put them in the oven when I take them off the grill. And apparently that's problematic for some people. I like to keep my food warm.
Yeah. So what we would do is, or at least how I was raised and still do today, you just preheat it just to keep it warm so it doesn't get cold. Not that you're cooking it again, you just keep it warm that way. So it'll be on the lowest temperature, nothing really serious, but just enough where the oven is still warm. And you keep your food warm.
There you go. See, we're just making sense here. That's all we're doing. People are coming at
that
us.
Makes sense.
That makes sense. We're trying to help people. Devon, I'm going to lead off with our Twitter question for this hour. In honor of 7-6 Day, we're doing all Sixers-related Twitter polls today. We're doing three of them. And it has to do with Ben Simmons and that infamous jump shot. Do we make too much of Ben Simmons' jump shot? Stop, he's fine, or absolutely not? We need to talk about it as much as we do.
I'm conflicted on this one. Mm. So here's my thing. Yeah, I'll answer your question. It is, we don't make too much of it. Yes, you still have to talk about it. So, but my thing with this is, Mark, once I get in season and I'm about 10, 15 games in and there's an 82-game season plus the playoffs, I stop harping on it because he's not going to do it.
Right.
We can all go down to the games and watch him shoot pregame. We can all sit and have the access that we have at practice and watch him do the exact same thing and see him knock down the jump shot. But I try not to let myself go and drive myself crazy in season when there's so much going on within a basketball game with 17 players and a coaching staff that I have to worry about more so than worry about Ben Simmons' jump shot when I know he's not going to shoot it. So that's how I approach it. I know how others do. And when we take our phone calls and we take the tweets and all, I understand. I don't ignore them. I just pointed out that I know at some point in the season he's not going to do it. When the summertime happens, like last summer when he puts out the videos and he's going crazy, Joe Torti will tell you, we sat there, we would debate if we would talk about it, because I'm sitting there, I'm like, I'm not talking about this. He's not going to shoot it. You know, I mean, I've seen it before, so this is not surprising to me where I want to sit here, not that I'm not going to talk about it, because it's a show topic, it's a conversation, we have a show to do,
right.
And it's conversational, but I just pull myself away from it because I like the guy so much. I think, just like anyone else, that this will help him tremendously. But there's obviously something wrong there. So I don't allow myself to get all up in arms about it after around that 15-20 game mark when I know he's not going to do it.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful way to stay sane. And I hope I learn that trick from you one day, my friend.
Every time he doesn't do it, I will text you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Devon. So you are on Devon Givens. What are you more excited to see? When everything starts up, the version of the Sixers with Al Horford off the bench or the version of the Sixers with Shake Milton in the starting lineup?
I remain the version of Sixers with Shake Milton in the lineup.
Nice.
Because we saw it work. Now, the only thing that we did not see it work with is Ben Simmons.
Right.
So a healthy Ben Simmons with Shake Milton, we can talk about the pick and roll with those two guys together, taking some of the pressure off of Simmons with the ball in his hands and allowing Shake Milton to do a little more with the offense. I'm excited to see that. I think he's earned at least that option at the start. Now, if he loses it, that's one thing. But coming back, he did nothing to lose that spot. And in that regard, that's where I'm excited about. The fact that he can shoot the basketball and he can catch it off the pass from Ben Simmons, the double teams as well with Joel Embiid, and Tobias Harris as well. When the ball is swinging and Shake Milton has an open opportunity, I think people now are confident after his 39-point performance and the other good outings that he had to feel good about him in the lineup. But I am excited to see who Shake Milton is with Ben Simmons. But I'm excited about it, but we haven't seen it yet. So I hope it's something that does, in fact, work.
Devon, a lot of people are calling for Al Horford, obviously, as we're talking about, coming off the bench. But there's been talk also of him just being the backup to Joel Embiid. Should he become that 15-18-minute-a-night guy, is that better for this basketball team, or has that hurt them a lot?
I think it still hurts them. I think he's still a better basketball player than 15-18 guy a night. I'm still in that 25-30 range as well, because we can't ignore his defense. Say what you want about him offensively, defensively, we've still seen him have success even against the likes of Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, and Jason Tatum. I mean, he did play well in some of those games against the Celtics where he went up 3-1 on the series, the Toronto Raptors as well. You got him for the playoffs to guard those three guys, specifically Giannis and Siakam as well. And even when you look at a situation like the Miami Heat, if you get there, how about Bam Adebayo?
Right.
And maybe Joel Embiid cannot defend him, but Al Horford is more fluid afoot and he can stay with him. So I still think that I'm not necessarily on the same page as maybe Elton Brand and Brett Brown, where they only spit out, we were built for the playoffs. We don't know that yet. So we'll see that when we get there. However, as far as Al Horford, I still think he has some value with this team defensively. And if he is anchoring the second unit and you are able to find him some better options offensively, I still think he's very valuable defensively for this team as well. If Joel Embiid, of course, is a defensive player of the year candidate, which we all know he is, Al Horford, he hasn't lost it that much where he's still not talked about as one of the better front court defenders in the NBA.
Devon, I want to ask you a question. And, you know, the Sixers are one spot behind the Pacers at the sixth seed. Now, I want to read you something before I ask this question. And it's from Jay Michaels, who is a reporter for the Pacers. He writes for the Indy Star. He said in a tweet that the Pacers would have to waive a player to sign someone else to replace Oladipo. Not doing that, I'm told their priority remains getting out of this in one piece. Advancing in the playoffs is not a priority, and other teams feel the same. This isn't a typical postseason. So with that in mind, and you see the Pacers' mindset, what should the Sixers' mindset be going into the bubble where they know so little? Should it be to win it all, or should it be to survive?
No, full steam ahead, Chris. They still have to go. They have championship aspirations. No one predicted the Indiana Pacers to represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals prior to the start of the 1920 season. The Sixers were, myself included, on the top of everybody's list, for the Eastern Conference. The Indiana Pacers were still a very good Eastern Conference playoff team, where the Sixers, though, were said to be that good, that can challenge the Milwaukee Bucks, that will challenge the LA Clippers or the Lakers in the NBA Finals. A different path for these two organizations. And I think with so much on the line for job security as well, with all due respect to Brett Brown, this is not any time where he can go out there and he might be safe because of the coronavirus and the shutdown of the season. Nate McMillan is safe right there in Indiana. He has no problem. As far as Philadelphia, though, with Al Horford and the questions that we are just talking about, none of us imagine having this question starting game number, whatever it's going to be, 66, while they would be in Orlando for the start of the regular season. But we did have those conversations about Joel Embiid and his health, and should he be traded? The same for Ben Simmons because of his jump shot. Should he be moved? And certainly for Brett Brown after losing in game number 7 and the year before losing in the second round to the Boston Celtics, should he remain the head coach of this job? So, Chris, the Sixers, Brett Brown and the rest of some of the select people that I just named, they don't have the same luxury as the Indiana Pacers. They have to go full steam ahead and try to win this thing.
Sixers obviously want to win it all. How far do they get in the bubble this postseason?
Right now I have them, and it's not a lock, of course, because we don't know who anybody is at this stage of the season. But right now I do have them with a very good chance of advancing to the second round, and that's it. If they stay put at 6, as you mentioned, the Toronto Raptors are the team that scare me the most. And if for them, they have so much trouble. Marc Gasol is the kryptonite for Joel Embiid. And Ben Simmons, even though Kawhi Leonard is not there, we saw them against the Raptors in the postseason. He only had a good game 6, and that's it. So I think that round 2 is it for them, for me. But it doesn't mean that as they are put together, coming back healthy, that they cannot make a deep run into the Eastern Conference playoffs as we predicted at the start of the campaign.
Speaking with our own Devon Givens. Devon, the other part of this, we talked about different guys coming off the bench, guys going on the bench. Overall style of play, even with Shake Milton in the starting lineup, will that be enough, or does Brett Brown have to schematically change this team as well?
I don't think he has to schematically change much. When we saw them at 29-2, we saw them a variety of different ways at home. When we saw them at 10-24, the same deal on the road. They're the same personnel, same people. Why the big disparity there? And so I don't think there has to be much. And Brett Brown talked about he believes that he, the coaching staff, and the players have found the problem that was there for them at 10-24 away from the center. And we know they're away from the center for the rest of the season, but it's in a neutral spot with everyone else. I think they can play the same style, incorporate the bully ball that you guys were talking about because the game does slow down in the playoffs. But still, you have to be up-tempo because that's where your second-best player is at his best. That is where Shake Milton is also very good, thriving in transition. And if you want to get some open looks that are much easier and not cause turnovers like a double team coming at Joel Embiid and smaller defenders swiping at his dribble because of they understand what his concept is of passing, then you still want to get out in transition, Mark. You want to get easy buckets as much as you can. So You still run. Ben Simmons is at his best. Get him those looks that way also. And then find those open three-point shots. And I don't know how deep the rotation is going to be because this is a weird thing, man. We have no idea of what this is going to look like. So he might have to go a little deeper than the 8-9-man rotation that he's accustomed to. It might even have to go 9-10 just because we have no idea what type of shape people are in. So I would say still do what you do. Do what you have done. Focus mostly on what you did at 29-2 at home, but also still mix in some other things. Concept-wise and schematically, there's room to still mix in new things with as much time off as they've had.
That was going to be my question to you, Devon, about the rotation. I think, and you know, knowing Brett Brown the way we do, in this startups, I would say the first 4 to 6 games, I think we're going to see everybody. I think he, you know, Howell Neto's going to get minutes. I mean, you're going to see everybody. Embiid might even sit on the bench. But once it comes to playoff time, Embiid might do the load management, rather. But once it comes to playoffs, who do you think will be, it's going to shrink down to 8 or 9 probably. Who do you think will be those guys coming off the bench after Al Horford?
It's tough for me because here's my thing. Let's say Shake doesn't work and he doesn't trust Shake, right? And he has to pull the trigger on him and put him on the bench. Then who's in? We've seen what Marco Bellinelli can have a very good series against the,
Brooklyn
Nets. Brooklyn.
Yeah, right.
First time. And then you go to Boston and he can't play.
Right.
And Furkan Korkmaz, it'll be the same deal because Furkan Korkmaz
can't play defense. Yeah.
Can't play defense. And if you're not making your shots, you're useless. And they're going to tighten up on you. So I think it's up in the air. I think what we do know, as you just said about Brett, Bob, is you'll go Al Horford. He'll go with Mike Scott because he trusts Mike Scott. He's seen Mike Scott play good defense and hit big shots in the postseason. And then from there, I'm leaning more Glenn Robinson III and Alec Burks just because he knows he can at least count on the veterans. He'll give Matisse a shot, but once again, it's a different animal in the playoffs. And I heard Matisse say the other day, you know, the playoffs that he's been told about is not the same here. Well, you know, those 48 minutes are a little bit different when they amp it up. And it doesn't matter where the venue is, playoffs are the playoffs. And if Matisse Thybulle is not hitting his shots, and his defense is not up to par where people have him in the conversation of all NBA as a rookie, he too will be sitting down next to Brett Brown on that bench. So I would go with the veteran, Bob, to answer your questions with a sprinkle of Furkan getting a shot because of his outside shooting, and they're going to need it. They're always going to need it. And even Shake Milton. But I think Shake will be okay. And it may not be to the tune of course, 39 and 25 points. What I'm expecting from him is probably on average like 9-3 assists or something like that, and just not turn the ball over and play solid defense, not be a turnstile like we saw him at the end of the season last year where he was taken out of the rotation going into the playoffs.
All right. Devon Givens, always a pleasure catching up with you, man. When are you back on the air with us?
6 p.m. tonight, 6 to 10, and we'll certainly have a lot of Sixers basketball on 7-6 day to discuss.
Practically just a full day for you on the radio, my friend. Thanks so much for coming on, man. Great catching up with you as always.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Talk to you guys later.
All right, buddy.
All right, see you, man. Take it easy. Congrats. Devon Givens.
He makes a great point. The one word he used was trust when talking about Brett Brown. So a couple years ago, they had, remember Amir Johnson? We all love Amir Johnson.
So we're
at practice one time, and you know, we get done talking to Brett, the media, and I just pulled him aside alone, and I said, "Are you, please explain this to me. Mm-hmm. Amir Johnson over Rashawn Holmes. Don't get it." I said, "I don't get it a little bit. Tell me what's what. I understand he's a little bit a better defender, but his legs are shot. He was done. Like, Amir Johnson's days were done. They were done when he got here. I told you a million times, talked to people up in Boston. They were like, yeah, okay, have fun with him. But anyway, Brett was, he just says, I don't know. It's just this comfort. It's this trust that I have when he's out there. Yeah, more towards defense. He goes, I know Rashawn gives us much more offensively, hustles more, probably gets to more, definitely gets to more loose balls, but it's just kind of a trust thing. Devon said, Mike Scott coming off the bench. I thought, and I think a lot of people maybe think, that might be a guy who's the odd man out.
Yeah.
But Devon made a great point. Brett and his trust is a big thing, and he trusts Mike Scott because he's a veteran. He probably will, come playoff time, go to that veteran thing against most people's wish and go with the Mike Scotts of the world, and then, you know, a Matisse Thybulle might not see as much time as people would want.
Yeah,
It'll be interesting to see.
I like Mike Scott and all that, but he has like it started off as a bad start, and it's just been a bad year. Like, yeah. He has not been the same. Like, a year ago, when he came over here from the Clippers and Tobias Harris trade, he looked like a guy that could give you a lot of those good minutes off the bench. He could be a physical player for you if you needed to be physical down low. But most importantly, was the three-point shooting and that ability. He wasn't that great when he came over here. He hit some big shots for you last year. But this year, he's left a lot to be desired this season. He doesn't look like the same type of guy. So has he played himself out of playoff consideration? Or will he just say, hey, let me trust my veterans in a playoff setting?
Yeah, and if I had to bet on that, Mark, I'd go with the trust. And absolutely. Devon made a good point. Like, that's what Brett leans on, is the trust.
Not what I would do.
I don't think I would either. That's interesting. I don't know what's going to happen there.
Mike Scott became a fan favorite rather quick, and then this year a lot of people were like, I'm sorry, but Mike Scott hasn't gotten done. It's almost like the same sentences we utter about Brett Brown. I'm sorry, but he can't be here anymore. I'm sorry, but no, he just hasn't done his job.
Yeah.
And that's the unfortunate part. When you look at Mike Scott, it hasn't been his year. But when it comes to the overall trust of a veteran versus maybe a rookie like Matisse Thybulle, if I'm betting on what Brett does, I'm betting on Mike Scott.
And it's funny, you know, this Al Horford stuff, too. As much as we talk about him on the bench, Shake Milton, and when it comes to playoff, everything you describe about playoffs, and if you were talking to, you know, Brett Brown and all, everything they describe about playoffs, the first two words are defense and rebound. Okay, that's exactly what Al Horford like kind of lends to you, right?
Right.
Half court defense. It's going to be a half court game. It talks about all the things that Al Horford exactly does. They want to get out and run when they can, the Sixers, right? To get away from that half court offense because they're not great at it. Well, in order to do that, you need to rebound. Does Shake Milton in the lineup take away some of your rebounding? Obviously, it does because it's not Al Horford out there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's kind of it's a catch 22. What you want to do seems to be better with Al Horford come playoff time, but it hasn't worked in the past. So,
I'm sorry, I was a little distracted there for the last sentence. I think you had Bob because I just see this video by Crystal Rich of her hurdling. Now, I didn't doubt that you hurdled. I just thought that like it's funny that people want to be professional hurdlers.
And you know how Crystal looks good on this.
What's that?
So a hurdler, and I hope she backs me up on this. My dad was a big track and field guy, took me to the Penn Relays for like 12 straight years.
Oh,
you watch the greatest hurdler, although not only are they fast, you watch their head. And it never changes, right? It always stays on the same level. Even when they hurdle, you would think their head would go up. And if you watch Crystal's head, it stays on the same level pretty much when she's doing all her hurdles. Mm. That's the sign of a great hurdler.
Looks like good form.
Right, Crystal?
I agree, but in this video right here, head is straight, but form, let me just preface this with this. Form was not great, and I'll tell you why. This was live on television.
Mm.
There was no warm-up, and this was exactly 10 years after I graduated high school and stopped running hurdles. When I lived in Los Angeles, I would sneak to USC and go on their track and try to run some hurdles because I was fiending for it. So the form could use some work, but not bad for not running them in 10 years.
In a decade. Yeah.
Three steps between jumps, is that what it is? I'm trying to find the video again.
Three steps in between hurdles, and you don't jump hurdles. My track coach, shout out to Coach Jackson, he would yell at me so hard if I said jump hurdles, run hurdles.
Run hurdles.
Run hurdles.
Three steps.
You don't hurdle hurdles.
And three steps in the 100 hurdles. I did the full lap, so this was not even close to my race.
Oh,
the 400 hurdles. That's literally the hardest race on the track.
That's way too much running and hurdling and physical activity.
It's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. And then you did a field report. Look at you. That's awesome.
Out of breath.
I just retweeted it as well. By the way, folks, speaking of running, speaking of hurdling, maybe run over to our parking lot here at the West Lobby at One Bala Plaza here in Bala Cynwyd, where we're giving away 76ers t-shirts. It's got the Phila across the front of them here for 7-6 days. Here on 97.5, The Fanatic. We just got some more great guests. Actually, coming up top of the hour, 8 o'clock, we're going to be joined by the great Aaron McKay of Sixer fame and head coach of the Temple Owls. He'll be joining us at 8 o'clock. But if you'd like a free 76ers t-shirt, all you got to do is drive by, say you want one. We got our people set up, our man Connor out there in the parking lot with the 76ers red shirt on. You can go up, get yourself a free t-shirt just because it is 7-6 day in honor of the 76ers. All powered by Parks Casino and Sportsbook, the number one casino in Pennsylvania. Yeah, they're back in plenty of space for social distancing. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. When we return, we'll talk to Aaron McKay here on 97.5, The Fanatic.
Back BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.